Well, this is going to be pretty low tech compared to the last two presentations that we had. But I'm going to talk about applications of DNA testing. There's a lot of different applications of DNA testing. We can talk about parentage verification. We can talk about parentage determination, such as paternity and multi-sire matings. There could be applications of DNA testing in the product traceback. We've talked a lot about animal ID systems recently. There certainly are tests for qualitative traits such as color, coldness, the number of genetic defects that we could test for. But the thing I'm going to talk about this evening is quantitative traits and DNA tests for quantitative traits. And that would include most of our production and in-product traits. The thing that I'm pretty excited about is the list of tests and testing companies that we have on this slide. And if we were giving this presentation 4 years ago, there wouldn't actually be any of these up there. We would have been anticipating the release of the announcement of GeneStar Modeling, the first test that came out on the market in this category. So I think this is a pretty remarkable accomplishment in 4 years. What I think is really amazing is that there are 7 different companies involved in delivering these tests to you. It's a really high-quality set of companies, and I just think it's a really exciting time to be talking about DNA testing. The approach that I want to take to do that this evening is to kind of think about some of the questions that producers are asking about DNA testing. And I'm not going to answer all those questions, but I'll try to shed some light on them. And hopefully you can have some new things to think about in terms of figuring out how to answer those questions in your own operation. So the first one I'm going to address is, should I use DNA testing? And there's a variety of benefits to DNA testing, and we'll go through those. We can obtain genetic evaluations earlier in the life cycle. And this is really important for traits that we typically would collect over a number of parturitions, such as reproductive traits or longevity in cows. We can increase the accuracy of selection, and that's especially important for traits that are expensive to measure or self-eliminate, or we measure them only postpartum. We can get more benefit from each of the phenotypes that we collect, and that's really important for our extensive traits, such as shear force or sensory panel evaluations. And then we have greater opportunity to select for traits that have antagonistic genetic relationships, for example, birth weight and growth rate. Now, the downside of DNA testing is that there's some costs associated with it. Back in the early days of DIF, when we were working on age of dam adjustment factors, for example, it didn't cost you anything to add 40 pounds to the wing weight of the calves out of your first calf heifers. But then we move into EPDs, and that has a little bit of indirect costs associated with it. And then you got involved with ultrasound, and the checks that you're writing got a little bit bigger. And now with DNA testing, the checks get a little bit bigger again. And some of you are wondering, well, how many of these checks am I going to have to write before somebody writes me a check for a bill? So tomorrow morning, Jerry Lipsey and his colleagues are going to address this issue of what are the costs versus the opportunities for increased profits. I think that whether it's worth the cost or not is really an individual decision that each operation has to make individually. And it depends a lot on your role within the industry as much as it does the cost of doing the testing. So, for example, if you have a neighbor that can't sell his burros and you're wondering whether he's still going to be in business in 3 years, well, DNA testing is probably not going to solve his problems. But if you're producing genetics that are having a lot of influence on your breed and on the beef industry, and you're making plans for the next generation of your family to continue to have that position in 20 or 25 years, then I'm pretty confident that DNA testing is going to play a role in making that happen for you. So in terms of assessing where DNA testing fits in your operation, I think you need to look at where are you along that spectrum between those two extremes. One of the things that we hear a lot recently, or actually not just recently, but we've been hearing for a long time, is they just use it as a marketing tool. I don't really think that that's an acceptable use for not using this technology or any other. The naysayers have been saying this about weight, CTDs, ultrasound, and every other new technology that's come along for genetic improvement. If a technology is used successfully in marketing, then I'm sure that it's influencing breeding decisions. It's influencing the breeding decisions, certainly of the people that are buying the animals. And if it's successful in marketing, it's not going to take very long before it starts influencing the decisions of the breeders that are marketing those animals. So I think that over time, if we look back, it seems that the early adopters of most of the technologies have fared pretty well in the industry. So the next question that we could look at is, which DNA test should I use? And there's a whole host of detailed questions that we might ask about a DNA test before we decide which DNA tests are appropriate for us to use. And I think we can kind of boil those down to the three essential elements. One is, does the test work? Secondly, does it affect traits that you want to change in your population? And then thirdly, does it segregate in your population? So in order to try to provide information about these questions to seed stock producers, there's been a process called independent validation or assessment or characterization. I'm going to use characterization tonight of DNA tests. The basic idea is that we'd have standard resource populations of cattle that have phenotypes for the desired traits. We have DNA available on these animals. And then we have an independent institution to conduct the characterization. The National Beef Cattle Evaluation Consortium has initiated such a process. And the way that that works is the consortium provides DNA on these resource populations to a company that has a DNA test that they would like to have validated. The DNA testing company then runs that test on the DNA and sends the results back to the consortium. Then the consortium analyzes the data and reports the results in a standardized format. So we want to make that information publicly available regardless of what the results are. I think there's a number of benefits to this kind of an approach. First of all, the breeders have better information from which to decide which test to use. DNA testing companies can market their tests more effectively and with greater confidence once they know that they've been through the process. And the process generates information that's needed in order to conduct national cattle evaluations. So we sometimes hear the question, what do we do if the test is not being characterized in my breed? Because there's limits to how extensively these tests can be validated. Ideally, we'd like to see it characterized in every breed in which it might be used. But that's probably not going to be realistic. So you may need to use data from another breed that's of a similar biological type to your breed. And what we're recommending now is that these tests be validated in British cattle, in continental European cattle, and in Bos indicus influenced cattle. And that you work on results from within the same basic breed grouping is what your breed is. It just costs quite a bit of money for these DNA testing companies to go through this process of running the test on a large number of samples, and it does take a large number of samples to evaluate a DNA test. So if we make the testing threshold so high that the DNA testing companies can't afford to do it, then that really doesn't serve anybody. So we've got to keep the system practical, and we think that the three different breed groups is our first step toward doing that. So if you want to ensure that the tests are characterized in your breed, then the way to do that is to make sure that your breed contributes resource populations that are going to be high quality and are available for the DNA testing companies to use. And then obviously the companies are going to want to focus on breeds where there's an active market for DNA testing. So, your breed may need to do some DNA testing before you attract the interest of the companies. So we need to have realistic expectations for the process. It sounds pretty simple in principle. As we started to work through it, we find out it's not as simple as it first seemed. But we're probably not going to have enough data to answer all the questions as clearly as we'd like. But some information is going to be better than none. What really makes it difficult is when we have a test where one of the alleles has a frequency of only 5 or 10%. And then we just don't have very many animals that have some of the genotypes that we need to evaluate. So we'll have more than ample individuals with the most common genotype, but very few with the rare genotype. And we need to have enough animals of each genotype in order to estimate the effect. So that's just a challenge that we work with. There are some strategies that we can use in the validation process to try to get around that to some extent, but there's no way to get around it completely. So if we have a test that has a frequency of 50%, it's not much of a problem. But a lot of our tests don't have those kinds of frequencies. I think that if customers come to expect independent characterization, then it will become routine. And I think that as we go through time, we'll work out some of the bugs in the system and the process will improve quite a bit. So the Emerging Technologies Committee of BIF is beginning to put together a set of guidelines for DNA testing. One of the most active areas that was discussed so far is this process of independent characterization. We need to get those reports into a standardized format so that when you're looking at a number of DNA tests, you can just look at all these reports side by side. You don't have to know exactly what questions you need to ask. It'll be more obvious by looking at a set of standardized reports. There's a number of other issues that come to light in the application of DNA testing. There's a variety of different ways in which companies report the test results to breeders, and we'd like to provide some standardization in that if possible. Breeders are looking for guidance in which animals should be tested. There's a lot of issues in terms of how we get the testing data into the breed associations and then into the National Cattle Evaluation System. A lot of nomenclature issues, and then there's a whole other set of challenges in terms of how do we actually incorporate this information into the National Cattle Evaluation System. There's a lot of interest in what traits are going to be impacted most by DNA testing. And as you all know, so far most of the emphasis has been on carcass quality traits, primarily tenderness and marbling. We think that obviously there's going to be a lot of interest in traits that are difficult and expensive to measure. And as I indicated earlier, that's one of the primary benefits of DNA testing. And so we expect a lot of emphasis continued on carcass traits, especially tenderness, feed efficiency, reproductive efficiency, disease resistance. But tests for those kinds of traits are difficult to develop for exactly the same reasons that they're difficult to select for conventionally. We have limited phenotypes, maybe low heritabilities. That makes it more difficult to develop the tests. It also makes it more difficult to verify that they work. Now, as long as everybody kind of plays by the rules and says, well, we're going to just use DNA testing and not collect any more phenotypes, well, we can use DNA tests for tenderness, and we can increase tenderness EPDs once we get them into the evaluation system and select on that for several generations. But sooner or later, some renegade is going to go out and collect phenotypes on that. And then we find out whether those DNA tests really work or not. And if we're two, three, or four generations down the road before we find out whether they work, that's not going to be the best situation. So we're going to be in the situation where we're going to have to continue to collect phenotypes as we move along. So I think realistically, we can expect DNA testing increases the amount of information we get from each phenotype. Therefore, it can reduce the number of phenotypes that we need to collect, but it's not going to replace phenotypes. Well, one of the other benefits that we discussed earlier of DNA testing is that we can use it to break some of the antagonistic genetic correlations that exist between traits. For example, we could look at genes that would allow us to change birth weight without affecting growth rate, or perhaps to increase post-weaning growth without affecting birth weight. Now, obviously, we can do that with ECDs alone, but it's not as fast as we would like. And those correlations work against us in a traditional genetic improvement program. We think that we could accelerate that process with DNA testing. And so I think there could be some real benefits to those kinds of tests. But one of the benefits is that we routinely collect phenotypes for those traits. And so we can monitor that process, and we can learn answers to some of the questions like, well, do we really need to evaluate these DNA tests in every breed in order to assess how well they're going to work? That there's going to be a lot of other questions that are going to arise over time as we go through this process of incorporating DNA testing into genetic improvement programs. And we're all kind of learning together in this process. But we could learn that a lot faster with traits where phenotypes are more readily available. So I think we'll see some tests come out in this category before too much longer, and I think that'll be really beneficial in just helping us to learn how to use this technology and make the most of it. So which animals should you test? I think the logical starting point is the influential sires in your herds. That just kind of lets you gauge what the real frequencies are in the populations and which families you want to emphasize. But where you really make the progress with DNA testing is in selecting herd sire candidates. So you narrow your bulls down to the set that you think are most likely to contribute to the next generation. You apply DNA testing to those bulls, and then you use those test results to decide which ones you're actually going to use as herd sires. Obviously, you can do the same thing with donor prospects. And then in some cases, it may be practical to test all of the bulls that you're offering for sale. Maybe for some operations, it's practical to test your whole herd. I think it really kind of depends where you are in the seed stock pyramid that we discussed earlier. These optimal testing strategies also are going to depend on the frequency of the favorable allele. It's very different depending on if the favorable allele is very high in frequency versus if it's very low in frequency. If the favorable allele is very low in frequency, you may want to look at advanced things like testing embryos. So there's a lot of different strategies that can be considered. How should I use the DNA test result? This is a really important question and one that's a little bit involved. I think I want to start with looking at how our current genetic evaluation system is set up. We have pedigrees and a number of animals with phenotypes. We combine all this information together through the process of national cattle evaluation. We come out with ECDs that give us an accurate evaluation of genetic merit. Now, DNA testing has been oversold for a long time. I think we're getting better about it now. But originally, there was a lot of discussion that DNA testing was just going to replace the need for recording pedigrees and collecting phenotypes on individuals. And I heard an influential cattleman this morning say, well, surely within 1,000 years we'll be there. And I guess I found out that I'm an optimist because I think it'll only take 100 years for us to get there. But, you know, eventually we may, but I think it's going to be a long time in the future. Unfortunately, when we perpetuate that myth, it leads us to think that DNA testing is going to make cattle breeding simpler. I think in the short run, it's going to make cattle breeding more complicated but more effective. So I think there's benefits there, but I don't think simplifying cattle breeding is going to be one of them. This is my vision of how we're going to incorporate DNA testing into genetic improvement programs. We're still going to have pedigree populations. We're going to need to collect phenotypes on some of these individuals. We're going to need fewer phenotypes than we had before. We're going to take the DNA test information across the population, combine it with the pedigree and the phenotypes, put it through the National Cattle Evaluation System, and we come out with marker-adjusted EPDs. This is going to give us a more accurate evaluation of genetic merit, and importantly, it's going to give us increased accuracy, especially at an early age, and that's going to be important for those traits where we typically would not collect phenotypes until after the time at which our selection decisions have to be made. So this is an example, just a hypothetical example of what inclusion of DNA test results in national cattle evaluation could look like. We could have these six animals that we want to evaluate. Here are their conventional EPDs. You can see we have two both here that are high accuracy animals, presumably through progeny testing, and then a set of younger bulls that might be Herstar candidates, but we're just basing their evaluations on mid-parent EPDs. And when we run a couple of DNA tests on those animals, then we're going to have a slightly different model than what we had in the conventional EPDs. We're still going to have what we call a residual polygenic effect, which is computed in almost exactly the same way as our conventional EPD. And what it's estimating is the effect of all of the genes in the genome except for the ones that we're testing for. Okay? And then we have effects from each of these two DNA tests that we're including. And if we sum these three values, then we get what we'll call a marker-adjusted EPD. This would be the thing that we really want to select for in our population. Now what you'll notice here is that for the two bulls that were already high accuracy, their marker-adjusted EPD has changed very little relative to their conventional EPD, even though they had very substantially different test results. This one was helped enormously by these two tests. This one did very poorly on the tests. But what happens is that changes the residual EPD. In other words, that changes our assessment of how good these bulls are at other genes besides these two. But it doesn't change our overall assessment of how good these bulls are. Doesn't change our assessment of should we be using them in a breeding program or not, because they already were highly accurately evaluated. So if we already know or already have a good estimate of the breeding value of the bulls, then the DNA test results don't change our overall assessment of how good that bull is for the trait, but it may change how we partition that, our estimate of that genetic influence between the genes that we're testing for and the remaining genes that are affecting that trait. Now, on the other hand, in our young bulls, the situation is quite different. And what you'll see here is that their residual EPDs are very similar to what the conventional EPDs were, but these bulls have gone through a major re-ranking after we run the DNA test results. In other words, if we didn't have very much information to begin with, there's a lot more opportunity for our evaluation of their genetic merit to change. And so, this is why I said earlier that the real application for DNA testing and genetic improvement is going to be among these candidates to become the parents of the next generation. Your host child prospects, your donor prospects, embryos would fall into this category. So this is where you really gain, you have an opportunity to gain accuracy. If your accuracy is already high, you don't have much opportunity to improve it. So I hope that the last two slides showed you that we can't just take a set of EPDs and then some adjustment factors for DNA test results and add those two together and come out with a marker-adjusted EPD. We might be able to come up with an adjustment factor of these DNA tests for animals that had only a mid-parent EPD and then add the marker effect to it. But if we add that same amount to the EPD of a bull that's high in accuracy, then obviously we're going to change his EPD more than we should. And so it's really not straightforward to just go through and do this kind of additive adjustment. There's other factors that enter into that as well, such as if we had a mid-parent EPD, are the parents of this animal similar in their DNA test results, or are they different? If this animal's parents are heterozygous, then there's a lot of opportunity for the marker-adjusted EPD to change. If this animal's parents are both homozygous, then there's still not much opportunity for this to change. So consequently, we feel that the DNA test results really need to go into the National Cattle Evaluation System directly. So one of the other comments that we can hear is, well, the other guy's not using the DNA test results optimally. And the paradox that we have here is that it's difficult to include these DNA test results into the National Cattle Evaluation System until we have enough data to work with. But on the other hand, we're not going to get a lot of data until that starts going into the National Cattle Evaluation System. So we're starting to think about where we're going with moving marker data into National Cattle Evaluation. And we're working on the things that we can do. We need to get something out there before too long so that we can encourage and stimulate the contribution of data to the system. The technologies that we have right now for using the information are not optimal, but I still don't think that that's really a legitimate excuse for not using the technology. For a long time, we've talked about single trait selection and all the evils of single trait selection. Single gene selection has the potential to be just as evil as single trait selection. I think we've moved a little bit past the single gene selection stage now that we've got more tests out on the market than we did a few years ago. I think people are really fairly aware of this issue, but we still probably put, in some cases, not in all, but in some cases probably put relatively too much emphasis on the four genes that we have DNA tests for as opposed to the 30,000 or so genes that we don't have DNA tests for in our breeding programs. So we need to try to maintain a balance there. Use the test as is appropriate, but we need to try not to put all of our selection pressure on just DNA tests. And I've heard of some programs where people want to put together a breeding program, and we're only going to keep those that are homozygous for test X. And that's going to get really difficult once we start getting about 10 tests. There's not going to be very many animals that are homozygous for all of them. Actually, there's not very many animals that are homozygous for all four of the genes that we're testing for now. So hopefully before too long we'll have so many tests that it's going to be hard for breeders to really assimilate all of the information and make breeding decisions based on these raw test results. To do that effectively, I really would need to weigh the emphasis of each of these genes by its effect and by the relative importance on each of the traits that it's affecting. Most DNA tests we should expect are going to affect several traits. And for the foreseeable future, the DNA tests are only going to account for some of the genetics of any trait, so we're still going to need the UTDs. So, I believe that our breeding decisions really need to be based on the output of national cattle evaluation rather than independent individual test results. And we're going to have to do some work on the national cattle evaluation system to bring those test results into it. But I think we're making a good start on that. What should breed associations be doing about DNA testing? I think that the most important thing is to begin to establish procedures for direct acquisition of DNA test results into the breed databases. This is going to have to be done in collaboration with the DNA testing companies and also with the breeders or their members. It's going to be a challenging thing to accomplish, but for the technology really to benefit everybody, I think this is the way that we're going to have to go. And I think we're starting to see some dialogue open up on this front. There's an issue of selective reporting of DNA test results, and this can be a real problem in including DNA test results in a genetic evaluation system. If we're only seeing the results that the breeders like, and we're not seeing the results that they didn't like, that causes real problems for us. And I've been concerned about how we're going to deal with that. I guess as I went through the process of putting this presentation together, I'm a little bit less concerned about it than I was previously, because I think that as we increase the number of tests that are available, and with the possibility, for example, that somebody that doesn't own the bull may actually go buy a straw of semen and have that test run, as long as that is admissible to go into the breed database, that's going to discourage a lot of the selective reporting that could occur otherwise. So I think that if we go through time, this is going to become a less problematic area for us, but I think it is going to be a challenge in the short run. I think the breed associations have an important role in establishing policies that will prevent the selective reporting. And if the associations and everybody can work together effectively enough, I don't really think that's going to be a major impediment for us. And then finally, obviously, the breed associations have a really major role in educating breeders on the proper use of the technology. And obviously, our extension arm has that same role. So what can you do now in the way of DNA testing to make the whole system more effective? I think first of all, we can all try to work together to make it kind of standard operating procedure to have DNA tests independently characterized. You can generate data that can eventually go into the process. Use the technology to the extent that it fits in your business. And then we can all try to contribute to systems that allow these test results to flow directly through the breed associations into the NCE process. So in conclusion, I think we're going to have some difficult issues to deal with in the next few years. We've debated quite a few of them in the last day or so. We'll go through a number of others of them in the next few days. In my opinion, all roads to genetic improvement go through national cattle evaluation for the reasons that I discussed earlier. And I'm confident that DNA testing will become an important component of the genetic improvement process in beef cattle. And that's all I have, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.